This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Hollywood loves to play Santa Claus this time of year, like little elves. They've been working since last Christmas to churn out a bunch of films they think you'll like while you have some time over the holidays to see them. And then they drop them on cineplexes around the country as though Santa's sleigh had hit a speed bump and all of the presents tumbled out. But in amongst the super gifts that everyone wants are those occasional lumps of coal. And those are the films you need to know about before you hit the theater. After all, you're getting out of the house so that you don't have to endure Uncle Henry's stories for the zillionth time. And if you're using the excuse that you're meeting up with friends at the movies, well, let's at least make sure the film is better than his stories. For information on that, we turn to our trio of movie critics. They see films when they're sleeping. They see them when awake. They know if they are bad or good, so let's let them tell us, for goodness sake. Matt Brutson is film editor, arts and entertainment editor, and senior editor. He edits a lot.
I do. In my sleep, too, yes.
For Creative Loafing Charlotte, welcome back. Anne Marie Oliva is co-founder and film and theater review editor of Arts a la Mode, an online outlet covering arts in Charlotte and beyond. That would be arts, one word, artsalamode.com.
Correct. Hello.
Hello, hello. And Sean O'Connell is movie content director for cinemablend.com and many other outlets. And you could also see him on WCNC-TV NBC 36.
Good to be with you.
Good to be with you, too. Thanks for joining us all. As you looked at the – you just asked me – what do you think? What are you going to go see this Christmas? Mm-hmm. I'm going to turn it around and ask you, as you looked at the list of movies that are available for watching this holiday season, what excites you the most? This is before you saw them. What excited you the most?
I was really looking forward to seeing the return of Disney Animation with a movie called Frozen that's out right now. I'm a big Marvel fan, so I was looking forward to seeing Thor to see how that followed up. And I know The Hunger Games performed really well. And just the slate of films coming from directors that excite me. The Coen brothers have a new movie coming out. Spike Jones has a movie coming out called Her. If you like Peter Jackson, he has a new Hobbit film. It seemed like there are some real heavy hitters bringing movies into theaters. David O. Russell and so on.
Wow. Matt?
Yeah, I looked a lot at like which filmmakers I knew and trusted, and Martin Scorsese has a new one out, and The Wolf of Wall Street and the Coen brothers, even though theirs isn't opening here until January 10th, that's technically a year in release. David O. Russell with American Hustle, so a lot of the big players.
And there does seem to be something for everyone.
Yeah, I do think there is something for everyone. I was looking forward to Inside Llewyn Davis and Dallas Buyers Club, which is not exactly Christmas fair.
No, it's not.
Subject matter. But I thought that was a terrific movie.
Well, when did this year's crop, and we're going to talk about all these films that you just mentioned, by the way, when did this crop of holiday films start coming out?
I guess first week of November?
Yeah.
The holiday season is technically.
No, officially the first. They always open November with a really big movie. This year it was Thor the Dark World. They just keep moving it earlier and earlier.
Yeah, holiday creep. It's like everything else. Christmas decorations show up in the store now
but
in July.
So they do backload the movies to where we're squashed at the end of the year. And I kind of am always amused and annoyed by that because I would like to see great things all year long. But I understand why they do it because they're considering awards and trying to position themselves.
Yeah, but is part of the holiday rush of movies, good movies, big movies, because they're top of mind at Oscar and Golden Globe time.
Sure, absolutely. If you look at some of the lists that came out just this week from groups like the Broadcast Film Critics Association and the Hollywood Foreign Press who did the Golden Globes, they're all, not all, but predominantly movies that those critics or those nominating critics saw in the last few weeks. Like, especially when the New York Film Critics Circle came out with their vote, they named American Hustle. Now maybe they really do believe that that's the best movie of the year, but they also just saw it like 2 days before they nominated. And it's very easy to, when you're filling out a ballot, to put in names of actors or actresses that you just saw give a performance that maybe impressed you. So you'll see a lot of titles like Her, Wolf of Wall Street, Saving Mr. Banks, and you forget some of these other movies that you saw earlier in the year that are really good and deserve consideration.
Well, let's talk about a film that Anne Marie brought up first, I think, before anybody else, and it did open in, I think it opened November the 1st, and that's Dallas Buyers Club. Kind of a dark film for the holidays.
Very dark. You can almost smell the sweat. It's very dirty and gritty, but it has one of the biggest arcs of any character that Matthew McConaughey plays, where he starts out as a drug-abusing, homophobic, kind of a nasty, psychopathic guy.
Good old Texas boy.
Yeah, good old Texas boy. And because he acquires AIDS in this is in the 1980s. Mm-hmm. He has to change. He has to try to survive, and it's really I can't characterize it as a lovely story, but it's really a heartwarming story.
But
I
it's
think.
Not all just. You know, tears and heartbreak.
No,
there's a
it
lot
isn't.
Of humor in it, especially
a lot of humor.
In the relationship between Matthew McConaughey and Jared Leto, who plays another AIDS victim. It's got a lot of humor to go with a heartbreak, shall we
it
say.
It does.
It falls into this specific category that I've run into multiple times this year of tremendous movies that I have a really hard time recommending to people. I'm like 12 Years a Slave is an amazing movie.
But.
There's no way you should see it. Or like Wolf of Wall Street. Even if you love Scorsese, the excess is so much. It's like just don't see it. It's been a really difficult season
Fires
for that reason.
Club is hard to watch.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very tough, but
it's so good.
It's so good.
I would never not recommend.
Yeah, no, but I'm movie. Saying like who you can recommend it to.
Yeah.
For instance, like it's the holidays. I'll get a ton of relatives who come by and they're like, hey, what should we go see?
Unless you like them.
Well, yeah, exactly. I'm like, Blue is the Warmest Color is an amazing film. There's a 40-minute lesbian scene in the middle of it. If you can get through that, you know, so it's just you have to sort of weigh who your audience is.
You call – I was going to say not that there's anything wrong with that. Who's,
well, sure, for some.
Who said that? There's somebody famous said that after everything about
– Jerry Seinfeld?
It was Jerry Seinfeld.
Seinfeld? Yes.
You mentioned two stunning performances in Dallas Buyers Club. Of course, McConaughey and Jared Leto.
Right.
And McConaughey lost a tremendous amount of weight.
He did.
For
he
this
looks
film.
Basically like a skeleton.
When you do that for Oscar time, that's when you get awards, isn't it? When you lose weight or gain weight.
You know, I have mixed feelings. I have mixed feelings about that. I mean, do you put your health at risk? I mean, yet it. I have to say, it does enhance his performance. So it's really. You know, usually he's taking his clothes off in every movie he's in because he's got a good body, and you see some of his body here, and it does bring it home. How much AIDS did ravage people before they stabilized the medication and everything.
When he gets diagnosed, he has 30 days to live. I mean, it harkens back to those really early days when they didn't know what this was or how to cure or how to treat it or where it came from, and people were going like that.
Right, and I must say the FDA doesn't look very good in this movie.
Well, right, because the point of the story is the fact that he finds medication that can help him, but it's not approved in our country.
Right.
And so he thinks about a loophole to bring this medication to the people who could really use it. I mean, it has a really good story to tell. It's not just watch this A-lister melt away.
Exactly.
And despite your reluctance to recommend it to Aunt Martha, you called this easily one of the best films of the year.
I thought it was extremely powerful.
Yes.
And it's continuing this trend of McConaughey performances where all of a sudden he's waking up and realizing, gosh, I have the talent to be this
amazing
actor.
I don't need to play bongos anymore.
Right, exactly, because he was in a film earlier this year called Mud, where I thought he was fantastic in. He has a very brief cameo in Wolf of Wall Street, but
it's
extremely entertaining.
The best part
it's really funny. And so, I would totally recommend this movie.
So let's go around the table. How'd you rate it?
What do you mean in terms of stars?
Well,
it was one of my. It's one of my best of the year.
It's on my top 10.
It's 4.5 out of 5.
Might not make my top 10, but it's up there.
So don't go see it on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. Maybe put it off for later in the week.
Sure, exactly. Yeah, it depends what you're looking for. Just know what it is.
Go
with all of these films, know what they are.
If you're really depressed over the holidays, go see it. Your life isn't that bad.
Right, exactly. You're healthy.
I know that you love animation, Sean, and Disney's Frozen is a film that you mentioned just before. We started on the air, as a matter of fact, it's getting accolades also as one of the best pictures of the year. Is it?
Sure, I can make that argument. I thought it was a really good story. I thought it was a great musical. It reminded me when you came out of Disney films and wanted to own the soundtrack. And there were songs that I have two boys, they're 9 and 5. They still sing the songs from that movie. So it got into their brains like earworms. I thought it had a really good story to tell in terms of siblings. It wasn't find the prince and he'll save your life kind of thing.
Right.
And to me, when you were stacking up the animation, Disney's animation was above Pixar, which put out Monsters University. And there's not a lot of years or haven't been recently where you can say the Disney film was better than the Pixar film.
That's the big thing is that we've been watching Disney decline while Pixar takes off.
And yet Disney owns owns Pixar.
Yeah,
they do.
Yeah, well, they finally bought them out, is what happened.
Yeah.
But it's now starting to, you know, Pixar's starting to hit a bit of a wall. They're starting to repeat themselves, and Disney's finally tired of just sitting back, and they've been doing better animated movies.
We're talking about holiday movies that you should see or should not see. So far, the two that we've talked about are movies that you probably should see with some
reservations.
Some reservations. And we'll continue this hour here on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. You brought up something in your review of Frozen, Anne-Marie, that Bob Mandela, who is the movie critic for All Things Considered, mentioned, and Sean mentioned it today as well, the music in that movie. He said that you can almost, as you're watching it, you can almost see the Broadway show developing before your eyes.
Absolutely. And, you know, it has two strong female characters, as did Wicked, and which is still playing, you know, on Broadway, or playing, you know, as a play. And but I don't know. I take a little different take on it. I thought it was a little distracting. I thought the music was, you know, it was just a little too Broadway for me. But it's a good movie. I mean,
not that there's anything wrong with that.
Not that there's anything wrong with it. But in the middle of an animated movie, I don't know.
The songs weren't up to the standards that we've seen in past Disney. But, yeah, one of the co-writers of the songs was the person who did Avenue Q. So, you know,
well, that's going to be a different standard, isn't it?
Yes.
I'm surprised they let him in the studio gates. So, Frozen, another should see.
I mean,
even for
big,
adults?
It got a big thumbs up for me.
Yeah,
very much.
I would say yes.
Okay. Yeah. What's the worst movie you saw this year?
In general or just this season?
The whole year?
The whole year.
No question, Austin Land.
Oh.
Oh, my God.
I didn't even see it.
Oh, bad. Really bad. I mean, I know there are many, many.
Never even heard of it.
Yeah,
that's why.
It's Jane Austen fans. They go to some kind of an estate.
Theme park.
Theme park kind of thing. It was dreadful.
It didn't get good reviews.
It's not good.
It was dreadful. It was the worst thing I think I've seen this year.
Okay. I think mine would be Movie 43, which was a deranged attempt to do a Kentucky Fried Movie type film where they just got every big star they could blackmail. And I'm not kidding on that. They were like, you know, basically holding their families hostage and saying, you're going to appear in our movie. It had Hugh Jackman, Kate Winslet, just a bunch of incredible people. And it was just utterly awful, just a bunch of very unfunny, vulgar skits.
Mm-hmm. Mine would be The Mortal Instruments, which people might not know about. It was a young adult adaptation. You know, Hollywood's trying to find the next Hunger Games or Twilight desperately, and so they're greenlighting anything that can get made. And it was the one time this year that, like, half an hour into it, I just wanted to run to the exit. And then, like, 45 minutes into it, I wanted to stay just so I could kick the daylights out of this movie because it was so awful on every level. And, you know, it scares me that they're thinking about making a sequel, even though it bombed at the box office. But Hollywood's so desperate.
Why would they think about making a secret of a bomb?
Because
a sequel to a bomb?
They still need to appeal to that young adult audience. And those teenagers will come out and support, you know, almost anything. And so if they keep it really cheap, I mean, there's no stars in it. They're just, you know, handsome CW type actors. And if they keep the costs down, they can keep cranking out these franchises and hopefully earn a little bit of a profit.
I happened to watch a show on the CW the other night for the first time ever. And I forgot why I watched it, but I tuned in purposefully to see it. The whole network was like young and pretty and stupid. And because I watched the show afterward because I thought, I wonder what this is about.
Right, right.
And they're all young, pretty, stupid, and vampires.
And profitable.
And a young adult movie that's really good is The Spectacular Now. And I think that opened and closed very quickly. But that is a terrific movie.
Mm-hmm. We have to take a break. We can come back more in a moment and talk about more movies, including another barn burner for the holidays, Nebraska. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're joined in our Spirit Square studio by our trio of film critics, Anne-Marie Oliva, founder and editor and critic at artsalamode.com, Matt Brunson, film arts, entertainment senior editor, blah, 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 creative loafing, Charlotte, and Sean O'Connell, movie content director for Cinema Blend. It sounds like a coffee shop. Cinemablend.com and WCNC TV Channel 36 here in Charlotte. Nebraska. We have talked a little bit about how it seems odd that there are so many downer kind of movies out at the holidays. I'm not sure this is a downer, but it's a heavy film. It's not a happy-go-lucky film, is it? Nebraska?
Well, it kind of is. I mean, it has a lot of humor. It's by mm-hmm. Alexander Payne, who did such movies as Sideways
right.
and The Descendants. So it's mainly this father-son relationship on the road, although not as cut and dry as that, because it's about a elderly man played by Bruce Dern who gets one of those kind of scam, buy a magazine, you want $1 million, and he really thinks he won $1 million. So he wants yeah. to go to the headquarters in person and pick it up. And even though everybody else tells him he's crazy, he's determined to do it. So he and his son head off to go pick up his loot.
And his son tries to talk him out of it,
yeah,
too, right?
But then finally decides, well, better me drive him than him try to walk, you know, hundreds of miles. So it's kind of a look at family, but it's really quirky in mm-hmm. the way that Alexander Payne tends to do. It's a very good movie.
The Washington Post says you can almost smell the alcohol emanating from the pores of an utterly disheveled Bruce Dern.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, he's a great actor. We haven't seen him in decades, like much. He was around in the 70s a lot. We haven't seen him much since then, so it's great to see him land a great part.
Alexander Payne did The Descendants, which was a big film for George Clooney.
Yes, up and comer.
Someday he'll do something.
He'll get there.
Yeah. This movie shot in black and white. Mm. Why?
Well, I'm a fan of black and white. I think it really brings out the shadows of people's faces, of landscape. The landscapes are beautiful. It just really calls attention to really, I think, what's important. You're not distracted by all the colors and all the glitz. So I think it really helps focus you. And, you know, it's really a story about a life not well lived and the pain that it causes not only to the person who made all these mistakes, but how it goes through the family. You know, the price that the wife pays, the price that the children pay. It is a sad movie, but on the other hand, nobody is all one thing or the other, and this man did have qualities mm-hmm. that it comes out later in the movie, that he was basically a decent man. Yeah. So it's anyway, that I like black and white.
So if you've had enough of the ho-ho-ho of the holidays, this is a film to see. You said Nebraska, Matt, is less a movie involving a specific state and more a film evoking a specific state of mind. Mm-hmm. Is that helped by the black and white? Is it?
Yeah, I think so. It's like movies like The Last Picture Show. A lot of times when we have these movies set in Americana, the middle America, there tends to be a tendency to film in black and white, I think, because that's just, like she said, it really amplifies the landscapes. It gives it a more kind of gritty feel. I think it was a good choice for this movie.
And there's nothing colorful in the middle of the country anyway. All the colors on the coasts. I mean, yes. No.
I had a chance to interview Alexander Payne. His movie opened the Savannah Film Festival, and I said, you know, the industry's going towards 3D and IMAX and all of these gimmicks, and you come out with a black and white film. I said, are you not interested in those tools, you know, that way of telling a story? He goes, well, it's always about character, obviously. He goes, but I saw Gravity, and I saw it on 3D IMAX. I thought it was great. I said, okay, but were you really pulled into the characters? And he said, no, what characters?
What characters?
Right. So.
All right, let's talk about a really big film that's come up in this conversation already. At least it was anticipated to be so, and I'm interested to hear what you have to say about The Hunger Games: Catching Fire. The first of this series of movies was filmed in this state. Was this one?
No.
Why not?
Well, because there's a big portion of it that has to take place in this arena that's set on in and around an island with a lot of water, and so we lost to Hawaii from that perspective. Okay. But then also Atlanta, all of these interiors, they ended up shooting in Atlanta, I think because Georgia just gave them more tax incentives and lured them away from us. So,
see, that's what comes with those incentives. Anne-Marie, you said that this film is far better than the first and more in keeping with the spirit and themes of the Hunger Games book. But the first Hunger Games film was one people could not stop talking about. I haven't heard a single person talk about this film.
Well, it made a lot of money, so obviously a lot of people went. I read all three books, and so I was disappointed with the first one. Mm-hmm. I thought it really didn't emphasize the right things. This one, I thought the characters are more coming into their own, and I like some of the sci-fi elements that she brings in that were not brought in as much in the first film. And I thought, of course, Jennifer Lawrence is terrific. And continues to be, and it really draws you mm-hmm. in. So I thought this one was better.
Matt?
Yeah, I like the first one, but this one is indeed better.
And, wow.
Yeah.
Why is nobody – I've heard nobody talk about this film.
Well, it's made a very quiet $760-something million. Dollars. I mean, yeah. it outpaced the first one.
I've seen a little chart that they do in the New York Times about right. box office and stuff, but I just don't hear anybody talking about it.
So. This is the point that you're bringing up with the fact that these theaters are getting flooded with new films.
Because The Hobbit came out right after, and you know, I think we're already stopping to hear about The Hobbit. It's just making money.
So these films continue to make money. They do. The fans come out and they support them, but the headline becomes what the next big movie is, and right now there's two or three other big movies that came out after it.
Well, I don't know if this is good news or bad news, but Ron Burgundy is back.
Mr. Burgundy, we're starting a 24-hour news channel. First of its kind, GNN.
That is without a doubt the dumbest thing I've ever heard. You mean news going 24 hours around the clock? A channel that's never off, in other words.
Yeah. Just 24 hours. It's a...
No offense, but you are stupid.
I assure you, we are 100% for real. We've got state-of-the-art facilities in Manhattan.
Yeah.
This is your first week's salary.
By the hymen of Olivia Newton-John!
What do you say, Ron?
I'll take the job. And I swear I'll be number one again. I'm going to do what God put Ron Burgundy on this earth to do. Have salon quality hair and read the news.
Oh, gosh. People talk about this being giving them belly laughs, this movie. Is it really that funny?
It's
that was funny.
Sean's the one who actually told me, because I wasn't a fan of the first one, and he said, and so many other people have said, that it's one you don't like at first, and then it grows on you. Mm-hmm. And I saw it again, and it did. It was funnier. This one, you don't have to wait. It's funny right off the bat.
And it's got to be having some experience in TV news. There is a foundation of truth in this film.
Absolutely.
Yes. And that was underlined by the fact that when he went out to promote this film, Will Ferrell, he ended up co-anchoring a newscast on a local station in South Dakota. Now, I know it's South Dakota. It's not exactly a major market. But who would let Will Ferrell, as Ron Burgundy, anchor your local newscast? What is wrong with these people?
With no announcement, no fanfare, and no one really acknowledged it either. He was just sitting there. Wow. All of a sudden, just sitting there. I think the smartest thing they did with this sequel is they waited until they had something. It's been almost 10 years, you know, and they waited until they actually – whether they were waiting to have something to say or whether it just happened that way, they have so many pointed things to say about the 24-hour news cycle and these networks and what they cover. It gave it an element of humor and of subtext that I wasn't expecting out of the Anchorman sequel. And if it's funny, I laughed until I was wiping tears out of my eyes three or four different times. Someone made a comment on Facebook that I sounded like Ed McMahon cackling next to Johnny Carson in the theater, and I just couldn't control myself. I was laughing so hard at some of the sequences. I thought it was really
funny. It is funny. Some of it is stupid, of course.
Oh, most of it.
Yeah, most of it. There are some really funny bits. So in between, it's I'm not a big fan of his humor, but I think it's worth seeing it. I mean, if you just want to go and have a good time.
I suppose we should mention the name of the film. We haven't mentioned the name of the film yet. Anchorman 2, The Legend Continues. And if you want to see your first film at 48 frames per second, you have a choice. The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug. Now, how do you say it?
Smaug.
Well, what the heck? What's the difference?
Smaug.
Smaug, he's a fire-breathing dragon.
You're going to get Tolkien hate mail
involved.
Flooding your inbox.
All right, Smaug.
Mispronouncing the dragon.
So this is beginning to sound like those publishers where every book title has to have a subtitle, because now we've got Anchorman 2, The Legend Continues, mm-hmm. The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug. Director Peter Jackson says that 48 frames per second is the way to see this film. Hmm. Now, there are three versions of this, aren't there? The 48 frames per second, the traditional frames per second, mm-hmm. and a 3D version.
And a 2D, and an IMAX. And there's about seven different ways to see this
Smell-o-vision.
Yes.
Well, it's not good with all those doors.
That's right. How did you see it?
3D IMAX,
yeah,
I believe.
Yeah, 3D we saw.
3D IMAX? Yeah. So we haven't even seen the 48 frames per second. And the problem is, theaters are not converting. You need certain technology to show this, and the theaters are not playing ball.
Is there a theater in town that's showing it at 48 frames per second?
There must be, because we saw the first one in 48. So.
What's the big deal with
Stonecrest, I think, is.
Stonecrest?
What's the big deal?
Well, I didn't care for 48 when I saw the first one. I thought it made everything look... It's supposed to immerse you in the action, and it kind of does, but it also flattens everything out, so you feel like you're watching like a soap opera or something. It's just, I don't think it's...
Not that there's anything wrong with it.
No, of course not. Or like somebody's home videos. Yeah. It just has this kind of flatness to it that I don't think looks good on the big screen.
And no other big filmmaker has stepped up to support Peter Jackson on
Except
this.
Except James Cameron's going to do the
is
Avatar
Is he doing the Avatar ones in that?
In 48.
All right, because Bryan Singer is doing another X-Men movie, and he came out and he was like, we're going to do 48 frames per second, and the studio was very quickly to come out after and be like, like, we haven't made a decision on that yet because no one's really embracing it. You're talking about no one talking about the Hunger Games. No one's really talking about 48 frames per second. Mm-hmm. So,
this is kind of like that new ultra high definition television that you can buy at Best Buy.
Yes. Yeah.
You can go look at the test picture that they have on the screen, and it is absolutely remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can actually almost see on a wide shot from across the Hudson River looking at New York City at people walking down the street. Mm-hmm. The size of a pinhead,
mm-hmm.
you can actually see their faces.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's amazing, but nobody has any material being broadcast or released on DVD in that format, so why buy it?
Mm-hmm. Right, it's not there yet.
Right.
And we may get there.
Right.
You know, it might take a year or two, and Peter Jackson could be heralded as, you know, the pioneer of this new format because he is pushing it. But
does this film need all these gimmicks, 48 frames per second, IMAX, 3D, 2D, etc.?
It needs an editor. How many frames it has.
Yeah.
Trim it down.
The editor got tired. There were too many frames. It's too much film. I got to take a break.
I mean, it's another 3-hour chapter, you know, of the second prequel. But if you love these Middle Earth stories, you can't get enough of them. And so Peter Jackson's playing to that audience. But to me, I wave the white flag on this franchise.
It's just fights.
A
and
long
then there's
time
a
ago.
Couple of scenes in between. And then there's more fights. And then there's more escapes. And it's sequential, and it's you know.
Yet you gave it 4 stars.
I did because I gave it 4 stars because of the visuals. I really think the visuals are incredible.
Out of four. Oh.
No, 4 out of 5.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought it was better than the first Hobbit too. The unexpected. What is it? Unexpected journey. Yeah, I thought it was better than that. Which
these subtitles.
I really didn't like that at all.
You know, so. 4 out of 5 sounds good.
Very good.
Until you realize it's only 80%, and that's a C.
Mm.
Well,
not
it's on the verge of a B.
Film ratings. It'd be like a 3.5 out of 4, probably.
Well, that's a C.
That's part of the reason why I don't like ratings.
Yeah, I know.
Because you have to really explain it, you know.
Ratings are kind of a general. I give people a general idea of what you thought, what your opinion is of the movie. I'm not saying that is the definitive grade it should get. It's just how I saw it.
And Matt, you said, I'm going to ask you because is the fact that they're stretching one book into 3 films something that contributes to what you call the sense of treading water, stretching out some passages, and reserving other plot points? Is that what's going on there? They're trying to make this into 3 movies. It's usually the other way around, where they take a book and they condense it into one movie and everybody's angry because it's not like the book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, is this more like the book?
It's the new trend, though, because they broke up the last Harry Potter book in the 2 movies, the last Twilight book. They're doing it now with Catching Fire.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the new thing is
all about
like,
making money.
Yeah, it is all about making money. They can make more by having more movies.
The Onion put out that story that the third Hobbit film, the last hour of the third Hobbit film is going to be broke up into 3 more movies. And they're just going to keep extending it and extending it.
Yeah. No, I was going to say it used to be you know, John le Carré, the spy novelist, the British spy novelist, once said, having your book made into a movie is like having your oxen made into bullion cubes. You know, they used to condense it so much. Now they're expanding, and I think the reason is to make money.
Sure. Mm-hmm. But does it work? For things like this, this is an intricate story. This is like a thing on is it HBO? Game of Thrones. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And it's got all these intricate plot points and characters and interrelationships. You need a lot of time to tell the story, don't you?
I don't know that they need 3 movies.
Well, or 3 movies at over 2.5 hours each.
Right.
I think maybe if there were 3 movies that were 2 hours, it would move along.
It was like the last Harry Potter. They made that into 2 movies, last book, and the first one was really awful. It was totally unnecessary.
We'll get to some other of the great holiday movies, or maybe not so great holiday movies, coming our way as we go through the hour here with our trio of movie critics on Charlotte Talks this morning on WFAE. You really liked Ian McKellen in The Hobbit, right?
Yeah, I think he's very good in that movie.
Expand on that, because you said more than that. I wrote that sentence down there as a plot point for you to expand upon.
Okay.
We have an hour here, so you can do three books in one show.
Okay. I'll review his performances in all three Hobbit movies, even though I haven't seen the last one.
But please don't.
I think he's a really good fit for the role. As I joked in the review, Sean Connery is somebody they were looking at, and it's kind of amusing to think of that. But, Ian McKellen just has this kind of gravity about him, his way with words, his great line readings. He's just so authoritative in the part that I think he's a perfect cast fit.
So is this a good movie to take the family to at Christmas time?
I mean, my kids would never get through it. You know, it's too long. I can't see it interesting them. And it's violent. I mean, for all this fantasy storytelling with, you know, swords and sorcery and bows and arrows, I mean, you're watching in 3D Orlando Bloom's character, Legolas, you know, shooting arrows through the heads of these orc creatures. And it's in 3D and it goes, you know, through their skulls. And I did bring my kids when I was watching the scenes. I was like, I'm kind of glad I didn't bring them to this.
I think it's basically, though, for middle school age and teenagers.
And Middle Earth people.
Because, they revere Tolkien, and really the books are about finding courage and, all kinds of things that growing young males, and that's one of my problems with this. It's all about the guys. But there was a reason behind all of this. It's not just to create these characters.
No. You know, most of the films that we've talked about, except perhaps Hunger Games, are about guys
mm-hmm.
so
yes,
far.
Yes, this is true.
Is that
Frozen.
Frozen
okay.
has two strong females.
So is there a balance this holiday season among movies that will appeal to and are about guys and movies that will appeal to and are about women?
Well, what immediately comes to mind is Gravity and Sandra Bullock.
Is that still considered a holiday film? It's been out for since 1920.
It's an awards contender.
It was pre-holiday, but
it's still playing.
Strong. Yeah.
It's still playing, and it's made a lot of money. It's made over $200 million, I believe.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, no, I never think it's fair.
No. I think The Wolf of Wall Street's your more typical. I mean, that's just waddle. There's one major female character.
We'll come back and talk about The Wolf of Wall Street, The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, August Osage County, American Hustle, and as much as we can fit into the rest of the time allotted to us here this morning. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with Sean O'Connell from WCNC-TV and CinemaBlend.com, Matt Brunson with Creative Loafing Charlotte, and Marie Oliva with ArtsAlamode.com. They're our trio of movie critics. There is a remake this holiday season in the offing, though not many will remember, most likely, the Danny Kaye original of The Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
Hi, Todd Mahar, eHarmony. How can I help you today?
Hi, I can't seem to leave a wink for someone. I don't know, is my page broken? Do I maybe have a broken page or?
Oh, I've never heard of that, but okay. You're trying to use your eHarmony account for the first time?
I am.
Okay, I'm looking at your profile. We have a pretty intricate matching algorithm. That's what distinguishes us from other online dating services.
Yeah, I like that. Actually, I'm just trying to leave a wink for one person. Cheryl Melhoff. She started in my division at work about a month ago, and I overheard her near the bagel saying she was on your site.
Okay, that's unique. But let me ask you, you left a lot of this stuff, like the been there, done that section. You left it blank.
Yeah, I think I skipped it.
Okay, well, you gotta help me out here, man. Don't skip stuff.
Okay, well, I haven't really been anywhere noteworthy or mentionable.
Now, this obviously, with updates, is based on a 1939 James Thurber story, which was made into a movie with Danny Kaye. But it's a Ben Stiller film. He's not only the director, he is the star of it. So fill us in. How is it?
Well, because, like you said, it's a Ben Stiller film. I expected it to be a little bit edgier and a little bit more creative than it ends up being. It's very sweet, and I think it has some great messages, and it's safer than I expected it to be, because Stiller directed Tropic Thunder, which was a surprisingly probing comedy, and he directed The Cable Guy, which I think has some real bite to it. Mm-hmm. And I was hoping that this had a little more bite to it. It's very mainstream. Mm-hmm. It'll do well with families, you know, over the holiday season. I just wish that he pushed the envelope a little bit more, because he had the opportunity to do it.
I did not see it. I missed it.
Okay. Yeah, I'm a fan of the Thurber story and the Danny Kaye version. This definitely comes in third of three. I'm going to say it's a nice little movie, but that's not really a recommendation.
Well, I'm told that one of you played a role in this film, so let's listen to another short clip here.
We have ahead of us the privilege of publishing the very last issue of Life magazine.
Jumping up and down the floor.
And for the final issue, we just received negative 25 from Sean O'Connell for the cover.
Yeah, how'd you manage that?
That cracks me up. This is the weirdest thing in the world. So Sean Penn's character is a photographer for Life magazine, and he's this rugged, you know, life-affirming guy who works with Walter Mitty. He sends his photographs into Mitty, and Mitty gets them on the covers. And they chose the name Sean O'Connell randomly. Yeah. And so it's in the trailer. It's all throughout the movie. It's really strange. And I had the opportunity to go up and interview Ben Stiller for this movie. And when they introduce you as you walk in the room, and they said, "This is Sean O'Connell." And he turned around and he goes, "No, really?" And I said, "Yeah, thanks a lot for that." I said, at first it was really funny, you know, and now it's just an incessant stream of people saying, "Hey, do you know you're in a movie?"
Well, unfortunately, it's the most unbelievable part of the movie because Sean Penn's character is really heroic.
Yes.
Now, there's a character played by Patton Oswalt, and I was thinking, that should be Sean O'Connell. But, you know.
Or there's a real jerk played by Adam Scott, too. And I had a lot of friends say, it should have been him instead. So,
well, Tracy Letts, who just took over as the director of the CIA on Homeland here in Charlotte, wrote a Pulitzer Prize winning. Well, Yes, Tracy Letts plays the senator who just took over the CIA.
I don't watch
Homeland.
That show. For real?
Yes. Wow. And he's the Pulitzer Prize winning playwright of August Osage County, which has now become a movie with Meryl Streep playing a sharp-tongued Oklahoma matriarch, Julia Roberts, as her equally strong-willed daughter, with others, including Sam Shepard, Ewan McGregor, Chris Cooper, Benedict Cumberbatch, and Mulroney. What are your thoughts on August Osage County? Another not exactly a holiday film material film.
Well, and this is weird because this was supposed to open at Christmas and it would have, you know, balanced the scales because there's a movie with two female leads. But now they're holding it until beginning of January. As for the movie itself, I liked it overall. It's frustrating in parts, very strong in other parts. But I think Julia Roberts is the real key in this one, not Meryl Streep, as one would think.
Oh, wow. Not that I thought Julia was bad in it, but I thought Meryl Streep was off the charts phenomenal.
But isn't she always?
Yeah, yes. And
so
I know that
tiresome.
It's cliche to say. and I actually went into it with that chip on my shoulder of, all right, here we go again. And then from the very first scene, I was blown away by her.
She's ridiculously
good. And what frustrates me even more than that is she just won the Oscar for The Iron Lady, which is a snoozer of a film. A good performance for her. And if she hadn't won so recently, we would have this Best Actress competition between her and Cate Blanchett for Blue Jasmine, and it would be a tremendous race, but they'll automatically dismiss Meryl Streep in this, and I don't think you can.
And
she's
fantastic.
She even
said when she won the Academy Award for that, well, I guess this is the last time I'll be up here. People are really tired of me.
Right.
But really, she's so good in everything. Everything
must
she
be
does.
In the genes, because her daughter is on HBO's Newsroom, and she, too, is remarkable.
Mm. Well, can you imagine living up to that?
Yeah. I just take my hat off to her to even set foot on a stage or a screen.
Comes
I think
home
she's
to family
got a
dinner.
Ways to go, the daughter. But
yes, but still.
Yeah, still.
Now, I didn't see the original play, and people who have seen the full play have problems with some of the things that are cut out of it. It's a long play, from what I understand, and the movie is a difficult sit. I mean, it's a vicious family just going at each other, but I found it to be extremely honest and really well performed.
The Abscam scandal was a big scandal many, many years ago, so long ago, in fact, that I don't remember anything about it. So to refresh our memories, writer-director David O. Russell is out with a movie called American Hustle.
You're going to do this because you got no choice. You work for me.
You keep changing the rules. You know, you're getting a little power drunk. Richard, you know, you want to tell him, Edith? You want to wake him up?
Oh, no. I said we shouldn't do any of it, Irving. You know I said that. So now I support Richie. He's got vision. Do it heavy or don't do it.
What does that mean? I mean, he's the one ruining America, not me.
How the f*** am I ruining America?
Because people just got over Watergate and Vietnam, all right? And you're going to shit all over politicians again? Hey, just because you want to be a big shot, get a promotion.
No, promotion. I'm thinking big, all right? This is going to be fantastic. We're doing video surveillance. I'm doing this from the feet up.
You will never do it properly because you got too much government attitude to be small and sleek. I'm
like the Viet Cong, man, all right? I'm in and I'm out. I was there the whole time. You don't know it, all right? That's an art of becoming somebody who people can pin their beliefs and their dreams on.
Now, Sean, you wrote that Martin Scorsese has his Goodfellas, David O. Russell's answers with his mediocre fellas.
Yeah, I'm the lone dissenting voice in this film, which I don't understand the hoopla that it's getting. It seems every season there's a movie that critics like to jump on and trumpet because of everyone who's involved in it. David O. Russell is coming off of Silver Linings Playbook. He's obviously a respected filmmaker. I like a lot of things that he's done. He's got a great cast of people he's worked with before, but I just found this movie to be such a mess, a hopeless mess.
I totally disagree. It's one of my favorites. One of my favorites of the year. And no, I'm not jumping on any David O. Russell bandwagon. I just thought it really flowed. It's got some great performances. It's like a Martin Scorsese movie, except it beats Martin Scorsese because it's much better than Wolf of Wall Street.
You want to critique Sean's comment that the characters are seedy, over-dramatized miscreants?
That sounds pretty accurate, but it's a good thing in this movie.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the middle on this one. I liked it better than Sean, maybe not as much as Matt. I think the ensemble acting really is the star here. You know, these are not characters that are warm and fuzzy or that you like very much. But I must say, the person who did the hair on this movie deserves an Academy Award nomination.
Well, and that's my big problem with it. Like, beyond the superficial, look how grotesque these characters are, there's nothing there. Like, the con is thin, the story is non-existent, and so when it runs out of how flashy and gaudy and ugly they are, I didn't think it had anything to say.
Well, I do think the Silver Linings Playbook is much better than this one. But
oh, much better.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. But it's, you know... I didn't dislike it the way you did. I mean,
and this is another one of these Hollywood films where if you're going to refresh your memory or you're going to see this as a history lesson, don't. And at least they're honest about
it. They are. They're honest right up front.
Put a title card up at the very beginning that says only some of this actually happened. At least they're honest about it. One of the memorable films of my childhood, I can't speak for you, was Walt Disney's Mary Poppins with Julie Andrews and Dick Van Dyke. But evidently, it is a movie that almost did not get made. And the story of how it was made is the subject of a new film called Saving Mr. Banks.
Good morning, Pamela.
It is so discomforting to hear a perfect stranger use my first name. Mrs. Travers, please.
I do apologize, Mrs. Travers. I'm Don DeGrady, the scriptwriter.
Co-scriptwriter? I should certainly be having my say, Mr. DeGrady.
DeGrady. Wonderful. I welcome your input.
If indeed we ever sign off on a script.
Right. This is the rest of your team. This is Dick and Bob Sherman, music and lyrics, voice, the one and only Mrs. P.L. Travers, the creator of our beloved Mary.
Poppins.
Who else?
Mary Poppins. Never, ever just Mary. It's a pleasure to meet you. Okay. Here we shan't be acquainted for very long.
Why is that?
Because these books simply do not lend themselves to chirping and prancing. No, certainly not a musical.
Emma Thompson as the prim, protective author of the book of Mary Poppins. Tom Hanks plays Walt Disney. The previews look great.
Yeah, this is where I guess we'll switch hats. Yes. Because I'll tell you it's one of the best films of the year. And these guys will tell you why it isn't, possibly. I was enamored with this film. And part of it's just watching Emma Thompson, who can't work enough as far as I'm concerned. She's so great in it. But there's a subplot to it that I really got invested in, which is the author's childhood growing up and the problems that she had with her father, who's played by Colin Farrell and gives a much better performance than I expected from him. And it's about how she has to get won over to the way that Disney wants to tell the story. She starts off, she's like, there will be no animation, there will be no songs in it. And of course, we know from she's not going to get her way, but it's how they bring her over to their side. And I really got invested in that story.
Yeah, and I was definitely mixed on it. I think the flashbacks, actually, interesting as they are, they kind of detract from the main story. I was much more engaged watching the other two. But, you know, American Hustle, at least, honest that it wasn't all completely, yeah, you know, fact-based. This one makes no sense. Such claims, and I won't do any spoilers, but like some of the stuff is just so fantastical.
Well, it's very Disneyfied. I mean, you know, Walt Disney comes off as Uncle Walt, and you know, the only negative about him is smoking. You know, he puts out a cigarette, and apparently he was a chain smoker and died of lung cancer. So that, I think, maybe that was their nod to reality. I don't know, but I'm with Sean on this in terms of the flashback to her childhood. And you understand why she was the way she was and why – I mean, when you write a book, it doesn't matter what kind of book it is. If it's meaningful to you, when somebody takes it and wants to make something else out of it that you don't see,
right.
it's like this is your child, you know. And not everybody has a happy childhood, but also not everybody has a traumatic childhood.
There's a line of dialogue that made me laugh so hard where they say, we're getting Dick Van Dyke for one of the roles. He's one of our greats. Yeah. And the way she bristles. Olivier is one of our greats. Dick Van Dyke is not. These little jabs all throughout I thought were hysterical.
No, it's very moving. And it's, you know, your childhood never really leaves you.
Mm.
And of course, in those days, they never talked about things that happened. You know, you just kept it all inside and it ate away at you a lot of times.
Well, for those people who are concerned about the Disneyfication of Broadway, she was like the progenitor of that because she was suspicious of Disney from the get-go, and it turns out, for good reason. Who knew? Who knew? We're talking movies with our trio of movie critics today on Charlotte Talks here on WFAE. Let's talk about a small film, but it has Judi Dench, Philomena. You hated this film, Sean. You said,
No.
My mom and her friends are going to adore Philomena.
Yes. That I didn't hate it. I guess I just hoped for a little bit more out of it.
This film will appeal to the people wondering what happened to the great Angela Lansbury and her wonderful Murder, She Wrote mysteries. Not that there's anything wrong with it.
Well, right. To go back to the theme of the show, not that there's really anything wrong with Philomena. It just played like a TV movie, you know, with a better cast than most of those shows necessarily get. I didn't hate
good.
It. It was
yeah,
fine.
It's not great, but it's good.
It was fine. Yeah.
Okay. Llewellyn, Inside Llewyn Davis is a film by the Coen brothers. They do very different artistically successful films. This is inspired in part by the life of a real-life folk singer and is being hailed in some circles as the Coen brothers' best work.
I don't know about the best work, but it's my favorite movie of the year. I think it's terrific. People say it's smaller Coen, which I don't agree with. I think it's just – it's another one that's just really infused with a lot of character and a lot of great acting and a lot of good songs.
Okay.
This is one of my favorites too. It's really about what it means to be an artist and can you compromise – or are you a sellout? And Llewyn refuses to compromise, mm-hmm. and he wants to be true to his art. Yet there's something that happens at the end. You can't manufacture success. You can't. You know, we don't often know who's going to be popular and who's not, and who's going to catch the imagination. So there's a lot of irony in this movie, and I thought the music was terrific.
Leonardo DiCaprio is back in another Scorsese film. He seems to be Scorsese's new go-to guy. I don't understand. I mean, I don't understand how that happened. I mean, looking back on the series of films they've done, yeah, it kind of works. But how did that happen initially, before it all came to be? It's The Wolf of Wall Street, and it looks vaguely derivative, at least from the previews, of other films about greed and high finance, is it?
Yeah, this is definitely, I think, the weakest of the Scorsese DiCaprio. And I wouldn't be the first to point out that a lot of the movies this year, from Spring Breakers to Pain and Gain, are about American excess and capitalism. And this just feels like one too many coming at the very end.
Well, we didn't get to talk about Grudge Match with Robert De Niro and Sylvester Stallone.
That's fine.
We didn't get to talk about Black Nativity, a Langston Hughes film.
I didn't see it.
Oh, I saw that. Yes.
And we didn't get to talk about Her or Lone Survivor with Joaquin Phoenix and Mark Wahlberg. But
Her, we need to talk about, if ever so briefly. It's extremely very smart, beautiful. Really intelligent. Spike Jonze, Joaquin Phoenix. It's tremendous. Look for it when it comes out in January.
And that's it's worth seeing.
And that's Sean O'Connell, who appears in The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. Matt Brunson and Anne-Marie Oliva. They don't appear in it and want no part of it. Thank you all for the
honor. Thank you.
Thank you.